As the Democrat and Republican candidate hopefuls battle it out in the political arena this election season, their supporters are navigating relationships with family, friends, colleagues, and neighbors who may not share their politics, but do share where they live. They share their towns. Liberals are everywhere, but in many places across America, being a liberal can feel like the minority, and in the country's most conservative corners, one might feel completely alone. Justin Krebs writes about this in his new book, Blue in a Red State, The Survival Guide to Life in the Real America. The book is published by The New Press, and we welcome Justin Krebs to the roundtable. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you for having me. What a terrific introduction.
We live in we're in a blue state, so we don't have these problems. But as you read in the book, this is a huge, huge problem. If you are a liberal in a red state, how did this come on your radar as something that you wanted to explore fuller?
Well, you already caught an important secret in the title, which is I myself am not one of the blues in a red state. I am a blue in a very blue state. I grew up in central New Jersey. I went to school in Massachusetts. I live in New York City. But I have gotten to know liberals living in the most conservative areas of the country over the last 10 or 12 years through an organization called Living Liberally, best known for Drinking Liberally Happy Hours. These are informal political gatherings at bars, cafes, restaurants, where people get together and talk politics. And they share their liberal values while they share a drink or they share a meal. And we started this organization, Drinking Liberally, in New York City, but it really came to life and took on a life of its own as it spread to places like Idaho, South Carolina, South Dakota, because in those places, it was more than a casual happy hour. It was really a lifeline for a lot of these liberals who really thought they were alone, and this allowed them to find their community. And through that network and getting to know these folks, I heard such incredible stories that I felt like deserved to be shared, and especially deserved to be shared during an election season, as you said, like now, where we are all talking politics, and some of us are more comfortable and confident talking about it where we live than others.
Do you have any tips, and this is just general, not so much red or blue state, but when you're feeling somebody out as to whether they're going to hate you if you get mad about Trump or something?
Tips on how fast to run or how to keep the conversation going?
well, maybe just to see where the leanings are.
The main thing that I heard from folks that I spoke to is that there isn't necessarily one strategy. You have to quickly decide how important it is to continue that conversation. Or as a person named Dean in Pawleys Island, South Carolina, described it, to keep the social fabric, to not rend the social fabric. If you are talking to somebody who you're going to be interacting with all the time, it's a teacher at your kid's school or somebody else at your church, a parent of a friend of your child, you might not want to pick that fight too loudly because you're going to need to see them again and again. And so you might find ways of letting them know that you're on a different side of the spectrum. You might more try to focus on finding the things you agree with quickly, but it's more important that you keep that relationship intact versus other times when folks from rural parts of Iowa and Kentucky to Wisconsin have chosen to pick these fights and risk ruining a relationship.
The book is broken up very interestingly because it is individual profiles of people or couples that live in red states. How did you find these people? Was it through these Drinking Liberally lunches and dinners?
I met many of them through the Drinking Liberally Network, which I've stayed involved with, and I've visited their chapters, or one or two steps removed from them. So some of these folks I met for the first time interviewing them for the book, but I had been introduced to them by folks who connected us. And what's exciting about that is that it meant that there was a lot of trust, since I had met some of these people in person, had been to their homes, their hometowns, and they were really sharing something that was at times kind of private. Some of them are very loud, liberal, political people in their town. Lisa in Waukesha, Wisconsin, is an active liberal organizer. Diane in Fairbanks, Alaska, grew up in a very Democratic family, is her county or her regional Democratic chair. So it's not like they are all in the shadows as liberals, but others needed to make sure that they could trust me in order to share their stories. You have folks who when they get to work each day, take the sign out of their window, the sign for a certain candidate out of their car window, because they don't necessarily want their colleagues to know their political leanings.
Mm.
Or other folks who, when they go to church, have to really think, do I want to wear my button for a certain gubernatorial candidate, or do I take that button off? Because what they firmly believe in their political values and what they firmly believe in their religious values line up for them, but they don't necessarily want to start an argument. So for those folks, it was great that I had met a number of them in person already, even before the idea of the book came about.
Justin Krebs is our guest. The name of the new book is Blue in a Red State, The Survival Guide to Life in the Real America. One of the things that I found fascinating, and I always look forward to these parts in the individual stories and chapters, were what I will refer to as the origin stories of how these people realized that they were indeed blue.
That's a great way to put it. You know, you hear about the origin stories of superheroes all the time,
right?
The origin stories of the super liberals.
Yes.
There's a way of actually dividing the book. And as you note, each chapter is a profile of a different person in a different town. And there are a couple states, Texas and South Carolina, represented more than once. But by and large, it's a real geographic spread. You could almost look at the book as, who were the people who were raised liberal in a conservative area? Who were the people who were raised liberal in a liberal area and then moved for school or for housing costs, for a job, for the person they loved? Or who were the people who grew up conservative and then made the switch? And those are the really interesting folks, because it's really like turning your back on your hometown sports team, in a way, or leaving your religion. And for a number of them, leaving their religion and leaving their conservative political upbringing went hand in hand. You had people who grew up very, very active in their church, but their recognition that they didn't agree with the politics of their conservative surroundings led them to also leave their religion. We have plenty of progressives who are active in their congregations as well. But there were a couple stories where those things would go hand in hand. And there were a couple stories as well where coming out of the closet, coming out as gay or lesbian, also went hand in hand with coming out as a liberal. Now, it's not obvious that you should have to be liberal if you're gay, or you should have to be liberal if you're an atheist. But in a couple of these stories, it really meant for these folks, coming out of a more restrictive, conservative upbringing where they weren't able to think as freely as they wished they could, speak as freely, or really be who they wanted to be, or who internally they knew they were. And part of that coming of age for them, coming out of the closet, coming out of the shadows, was also changing their politics, which is not an easy thing to do. You know, there's Chris from Yankton, South Dakota, used this great imagery. He said, you know, it's like our hometown sports teams. If I grow up in one town, and at a certain age, I decide I'm going to start rooting for the rival team from the other town across the way, well, that just wouldn't happen. You wouldn't make that switch, which is how he views his own father's allegiance to the Republican Party. That said, of course, Chris has made that switch and is now not only a Democrat, probably further to the left than many Democrats.
You mentioned Dean Smith a few moments ago from Pawleys Island, South Carolina. His wife, Rita, has an interesting story in here, too, because there's a line that you use that Oliver North's notoriety was part of Rita's realization that as a liberal, she was different from much of the country. And a lot of the people in this book, or there are several, that have those aha moments where you kind of live your life thinking you're normal, and then suddenly you look around and realize that everybody else thinks differently than you.
And that realization happens very often to the people who grew up in the more liberal areas. So you have someone like Rita, who grew up in Maryland, lived in the D.C. area, and then moved to Pawleys Island, South Carolina, which is largely a retirement community, more conservative. And the reason Oliver North came up is that he summers there or winters there as well, and they run into him periodically. As Dean says in his mild-mannered way, he just sort of nods to Oliver North when they see him. Rita whispers under her breath, "War criminal," and carries on. But in Rita's experience, she remembers back to the Iran-Contra fiasco and couldn't believe at the moment that was happening, that how much of the country was siding with North and with Reagan and was viewing him as a hero rather than as a criminal and as a villain in the story. And that was in a pre-social media era. That happens even more now, where where people are able to choose and consume the media that most appeals to them, you will have people who view Donald Trump as a hero and can get any number of stories they want to tell them that. And then you'll also have the liberal side that views Donald Trump as a villain and can get a constant stream of that input. There is this realization that sometimes happens that there's much of the country that's very different from you. One tactic to isolate yourself is to only live in your social media streams. But for liberals living in conservative areas, that's not a realistic tactic. You walk out your door every day and you're no longer living in your social media stream. You're living in the real world again. And I'd actually say that's a good lesson for all of us, that we shouldn't only be consuming and only be hearing the opinions and the articles that feed and foster our own predetermined points of view. We need to be exposed to a range of views.
The name again of the new book is Blue in a Red State, The Survival Guide to Life in the Real America. Justin Krebs is our guest this morning. One more origin story I want to ask you about, and then we'll get to the actual survival guide part to this. And you introduce us to a couple, Glenn and Christina. They live in Milford, Massachusetts. And for them, it was less a political candidate, but finally, the straw that broke the camel's back was Citizens United.
It was Citizens United that took these two folks who were relatively unpolitical, one a little bit more liberal, one a little bit more conservative. I believe she grew up in Greenwich, Connecticut, where her family had kind of periodic retail connection to the Bush family. But when the Citizens United decision came down, they just looked at each other and they said, enough is enough. And you know, this decision's only 6 years old. So you have folks who have rapidly become politicized, where they went from folks that, they voted every 4 years. I don't even know that they voted every 2 years in congressional elections before that, but they voted every 4 years. And suddenly they are activists. They are knocking on doors for gubernatorial candidates. They are trying to convene local meetings around strategies to overturn Citizens United. And in doing so, they became a little distant from some of the friends that they'd previously had because their everyday life became much more infused with their politics, which inherently meant that their social life did. It's what they wanted to talk about. It's how they spent their evenings. And they've recognized that not all of their friends have agreed with them, and not all of their friends have remained as close. You hear that from other folks also. A guy named Greg in Fayetteville, Arkansas, grew up in a more conservative part of Arkansas. Fayetteville is where the university is a little bit more liberal. He looks back, and most of his best friends growing up were conservative. Very few of them are his best friends now. That happened over a 20-30-year period. For Glenn and Christina in Massachusetts, it happened over just a few years period. And one last note on them is, of course, they're in Massachusetts, so some of your listeners might say, wait a second, that's not a red state at all, that's a blue state. Well, blue in a red state does not refer to literal states necessarily, so much as the red state of mind. And it is a good reminder that even the states we think of as Democratic have conservative pockets, and they live in a town that is by no means a very liberal town that has some of the more conservative impulses that we see in our country coming out in the town, and they do feel like the political minority there. And always worth remembering that Massachusetts elected a Republican governor. You know, these are not perfect blue-red distinctions that happen over our electoral map.
That's one of my favorite things of watching primary and political coverage with CNN and John King and his map of seeing those town-to-town, county-by-county red-blue. That is fascinating of how they vote.
It's incredible. And in some ways, it does confirm that more and more towns, congressional districts, slices of areas are more blue or more red, vote more Democratic or more Republican. And that's true. So in some ways, there is this stratification that you can really drill down on. But I push back on that in two ways, which I think is important. One is, even if a place is solidly votes Republican or solidly votes Democratic with 60% of the vote, still means 40% of the people feel some other way. That's a lot of people. If you walk down the street and four people are wearing the same thing or four people ask you the same question, you take notice. I mean, it's a reminder that the minorities are large minorities in a lot of these places, large political minorities is what I mean, and that if you're a liberal, you're really not alone. The second thing that I'd say is that even though electorally a lot of these places are very divided, you know, a Democrat will never win X county, a Republican will never win Y town, that doesn't mean that there aren't values or issues that can unite the people in those towns. How we express our values comes in a lot of ways. Only one of them is how we vote in a presidential or Senate or a congressional election. But how we engage on local fights. You know, we have folks in Idaho Falls, a place that will never, quote-unquote, never elect a Democrat, but that are successfully fighting to expand non-discrimination clauses to cover sexual identity and sexual orientation. Or you have folks in Grapevine, Texas, where a woman ran as a Democrat for city council and was attacked for being too close to the Democrats, too close to Obama. I mean, she's never met President Obama, but that was the attack. Lost that race, but can now form a coalition with the same conservatives who attacked her over good government reforms on the city level. So you have these opportunities for people to connect on a values level, on an everyday level, that do run deeper than the blue-red divide.
What would you like the takeaway to be after reading the tales of these men and women in this diverse country of how we can develop our personal strategy for living in that diverse society?
Well, I think the main takeaway for the folks who are living in those conservative areas is find your tribe. Whether that is finding the people who actually, you know, explicitly share your politics at a local political happy hour, or in these somewhat sidestepping ways, there are people who find their tribe at their local atheist secular society, or through a local independent theater group in Alabama was one story I heard, or by finding the radio that you do like to listen to. I mean, finding the ways that affirm for you you're not alone, and the people who make you know you're not alone, and it will make your life in these most conservative areas richer and more sustainable. And then for those of us who do live in the liberal areas and don't need to think about survival that way, I would ask us to take a lesson from the liberals who are fighting this good fight elsewhere and think about how the conversations we can have with people in our own community can also transcend politics, transcend political differences a little bit more, because I think the only way we're ultimately going to convince more conservatives or the large number of Americans who don't consider themselves liberal or conservative and don't follow politics that closely, the way we're going to convince them to come over to the liberal side on more and more issues is not through shouting at them on Facebook, is not through TV ads, it's through one-to-one conversations. And liberals in liberal areas probably get a little bit lazy about having those conversations because we're so confident about where we are, but it is as important to have them here to keep recruiting and engaging and listening to the many undecided or more conservative neighbors we have, just as it is important for those liberals in Idaho, Texas, and South Carolina to have those conversations one at a time, because that's the only way we're going to win those states back.
If you had written red in a blue state, would it essentially be the same book with the same message?
That's a great question, and I keep hoping that some conservative commentator will take that challenge and write it, and because I do think there will be a lot of similarities. I'd be curious what those conservatives view as their tribes in the liberal areas. I describe a lot of ways liberals find their people, you know, broadly speaking, in conservative areas, the people who affirm for them who they are, make them feel at home. I'd be curious what the conservative equivalent is in Brooklyn, in San Francisco, in Boston, in Ithaca, and so forth. I'm sure that it's there. Probably for some, it's religious organizations. I'm curious what other groups, what other tribes it is. And I think that otherwise, some of the stories would be the same. You know, one of the things I do point out in the book throughout is that liberals in these conservative areas can say something that very few of us in liberal areas can, which is that some of their best friends are conservatives, that as much as they might disagree politically with many in their surroundings, they also find some meaningful relationships with their neighbors, the folks across the street, et cetera. And I would hope that in red, in a blue state, conservatives would be able to say the same, that some of their best friends are liberals.
The name of the book is Blue in a Red State, The Survival Guide to Life in the Real America. The book is published by The New Press. Justin Krebs, thank you very much for being with us. Always nice to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you very much. Again, the title of the book, Blue in a Red State, A Survival Guide to Life in the Real America. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.